Welcome to the latest KleptoCast, the podcast series of Hudson Institute's Kleptocracy Initiative. Every few weeks, we delve into issues of kleptocracy around the world, how they affect us, and what Western policymakers can do about it. Established in 1990 to create jobs in the U.S. and encourage foreign investment in rural areas, the EB-5 Immigrant Investor Program has recently become a contentious issue for policymakers. In 2015, it was revealed that a former Chinese official was able to launder money through U.S. banks and obtain U.S. residency through the EB-5 program, and other examples of kleptocrats abusing the system have surfaced as well. Despite these findings of fraud and abuse, however, Congress has continually reauthorized the program with few revisions. Most recently, Congress extended the program from December 2016 to April 2017. So what does it mean to keep the status quo? Today, I am joined by Seto Begdoyan, the Director of Audit Services at the U.S. Government Accountability Office, who is also the author of multiple reports on the EB-5 program. We're going to discuss the fraud risks of the program, the potential for reform, and its implications on U.S. national security. Glad to have you join us today. So what is the EB-5 visa category, and what are the current demographics of the applicants?
Sure, yeah. The EB-5, as it's known, is essentially an immigrant investor visa program. It's been around for probably over 20 or so years, and the current demographic appears to be primarily Chinese nationals. That has, as you can imagine, evolved over time, and one of the things we heard when we were doing the audit work was, again, this is supposition on the part of DHS, is that that demographic may be driven in part with the status of anti-corruption efforts in China, potential capital expatriation restrictions, and those kinds of things that may have driven Chinese nationals to seek other places for their money, and it may have accelerated actually in the aftermath of the 2008-2009 financial crisis around the world.
So what was the motivation for the Government Accountability Office to audit the EB-5 program?
Well, GAO works for Congress exclusively, and our sponsors, our requesters, if you will, were concerned about the program's susceptibility to fraud, waste, abuse, and mismanagement, primarily fraud. We capture all that in what we call program integrity. How robust is a program, and how it's able to resist various risks. So our requesters asked us to take a look, and we produced the two reports, one in August and then the other one more recently. As part of more background for you in terms of congressional interest, I don't know whether you've picked up on any of this, but there are competing factions of pro and con regarding EB-5, and over time it's made for some strange bedfellows where you have Democrats and Republicans in one camp and Democrats and Republicans in another camp, so the two parties appear to be divided intra-party in terms of whether to support or oppose the program. So that's kind of a key thing to keep in mind.
And with these competing factions in Congress and the new administration, do you see any changes coming in the next couple of months?
Well, it's hard for me to guess on that. Our contacts with various staff building up to the issuance of the most recent report to them, it wasn't clear what was going to happen. I think, as I mentioned earlier, the factions are probably far apart in terms of figuring out a way forward. And with that in mind, neither side seems to have enough of a legislative oomph, if you will, to move their particular point of view and try and do something with the program as it currently stands. And of course, now with the end of the 114th Congress, the outgoing administration, a new incoming administration, a new Congress, the 115th coming in January, that's only going to add to the uncertainty of what happens with this program. So, bottom line, very hard to tell. There just doesn't seem to be solid support to go one way or the other right now. That would be my best guess.
So going back to more about the program and what the Government Accountability Office found in their reports, you mentioned the uncertainty in verifying whether or not the funds invested in the program were obtained lawfully. At the present moment, how much do we know about these investors and where their money is coming from?
Sure. Yeah. Well, again, just referring to the demographic I described earlier, the U.S. government, you know, USIS, the component within DHS, has repeatedly told us and others that there's very, very limited visibility into the finances or even the general business backgrounds or other backgrounds of the people seeking to apply. So what they basically have to go by is what is presented in the documentation that is filed as part of the application. And as we point out in the reports, in both reports actually, the paper nature of those applications really limits the extent of analysis that can be done. There has been some digitization, but just keep in mind that what we're looking at on average is about 14 million pages of documents generated each and every year as part of the application process. So basically trying to find a needle in a haystack in terms of compelling visibility to say, wait a minute, this person or this group of persons or this family or whatnot is just not someone we want to be doing business with.
And I know there was mentioning in the reports as well that USIS was sending teams to go monitor the situations of the specific individuals who were applying and seeing where exactly the money was coming from.
Right.
Do you have any information as to whether they're expanding that program or do you think it's still in its preliminary stages?
Yeah, it's probably too early to tell. Obviously, these things are initially on a small scale. The resourcing has been a concern for USIS. That's kind of a typical thing for a government agency to say, well, we need more to do more, which makes sense to some extent. But, you know, these types of site visits by themselves are only narrowly focused and probably a much wider approach is needed, which takes me back to the recommendations we made to USIS, especially in the 2016 report, where we basically told the agency to do that detailed risk profile, which is the more in-depth analysis of what the risks are, what their sources are, what their nature is, and then prioritize them according to their potential likelihood and consequence, and then kind of go from there. I mean, an agency can be doing a lot of things to show that, hey, you know, we're taking risk seriously, but in a lot of respects, those activities may be chasing the wrong risk altogether. They may not be appropriately tailored to what is actually a priority risk. They may be doing a lot to be chasing secondary and even lower risks, and missing the big risk because they haven't done a thorough assessment. So that's where they need to start, is do the thorough risk assessment, build that risk profile, and then that would inform and guide their more specific activities. So, long-winded answer to your question, just doing a site visit may or may not be kind of a good thing. They just need to figure out whether it's the right thing and match it up with the risk they're trying to mitigate.
I know that your office has also done work seeing what sectors and where in the U.S. these EB-5 petitioners are choosing to invest their money. So what were the interesting findings there?
Yeah, well, you know, there are a lot of these investors, they pool their money with these so-called regional centers. I don't know whether you're familiar with those. We do describe them in all our reporting on EB-5. It's about 800 of those around the country. All well, 48 states have them. I don't know which the two states that don't have them are, but they are very prevalent. And they themselves, meaning the regional centers, have been varyingly caught up in investigations by the Securities and Exchange Commission, for example, for securities fraud, where they basically took the investors for a ride and took their money. So I think at the time of our most recent report, there may have been up to about 5 dozen or so SEC investigations active, primarily for securities fraud. So the projects, specifically, they tend to be large-scale construction or development projects like high-rises, hotels, resorts, sports stadiums, that sort of thing. So these are big scale projects that need a lot of funding very quickly to get up and running.
So just one last question.
Uh-huh.
We talked a lot about the fraud risks in this program.
Yeah.
If the program continues without reform, do you think that these fraud risks have a potential to become a national security threat?
By definition, a program of this nature, scope and scale, you know, there's not a lot of transparency in terms of who the investors are, where their money is coming from, makes it inherently at risk for fraud, and certainly that would also have national security implications. Some of our law enforcement agencies have conducted national security risk assessments that are classified, and we don't refer to them certainly in our reporting, but they do exist. There are concerns, and obviously depending on the demographic of the investors, the connection potentially of these investors to home country governments and intelligence and military services and so forth, again, inherently that is a risk. How high a risk it is, it's difficult to say, certainly in an open forum. So, but there are concerns that it's not just fraud risk, but also national security risks that could impact the program.
Well, thank you so much for your insights.
You can find the full reports mentioned in this podcast on the Government Accountability Office's website, and you can read my analysis of the EB-5 program's fraud risks and national security implications on kleptocracyinitiative.org.